I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a five-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'm so proud to be teaming up with Fitbit again in 2020. I want to continue on my path of self-discovery and set myself new challenges this year. Often it's only when we're tested that we're awakened to our true potential. I recently completed a 12K run in the Swiss Alps, something I never thought I could do. But with Fitbit by my side, I'm able to stay focused on my health fitness journey, continue to be motivated to go after my goals and to track my progress too. And with that, I'm surprising myself every single day. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Bridget, also known as Bridey Bunch Triplets on Instagram. Bridget had just settled down with her partner in Dublin when they decided the time was right to try for a baby. They got pregnant straight away and were floored when her 12-week scan showed she was having triplets. Bridget tells me about how she dealt with the shock, what they did to prepare, and how overwhelming it was to find 35 medical professionals in the room as she gave birth. Bridget is so honest in describing what life was like with three small babies, how easier life became when she asked for help, and all the madness in between. In particular, one day when her buggy got stuck at the tills of her local supermarket as chaos unfolded around her. I'm so thankful for her honesty, and I really think you're going to love this episode. Bridget, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled.
Oh, I'm so delighted you're here. I've followed you for so long. I love your Instagram page, Bridey Bunch Triplets. And I think it's interesting. In your bio, you say triplet mother stumbling through the chaos with a few giggles, lots of bewilderment and a sprinkle of madness. And it just made me laugh when I read that, because I just think that just sums up everything in your life.
Gosh, if I didn't laugh, I would cry 24 hours a day. And I think the madness is definitely comes from every single day. I just sit back and I go, how has this happened?
You see, you had your triplets in 2016, the end of 2016. But let's talk about your life a little bit before they came along and before you got pregnant.
Okay, so I was working in restaurants for years, and I was working hard and probably partying hard, and I hadn't met anybody, and I was really a little bit wandering. I was a bit lost, and I decided to go to this amazing woman for a little bit of life coaching, a little bit of direction, I guess, and we did lots of work. So this is like my mid-30s, and your body clock is going bananas, because you're like, what if I don't have a baby? Oh my God, what if I don't have more than one baby? What if I don't meet anybody, etc.? So I went on a holiday to Croatia with my friends to a music festival, and I met my lovely partner, who is from Cornwall. But you kind of don't think it's going to go anywhere because he lives in Cornwall, and it did. And we did a long distance for a year and a half.
And what was that long distance like?
I used to describe it like I was Phileas Fogg, because I had to fly from Dublin to Bristol, and I had to get the train from Bristol to Cornwall. And sometimes you might have to change to the train like three times.
Wow, that's true love.
Oh, and you might only go for like two nights, and you're like, this is ridiculous. But we obviously had a big connection, and he's amazing. And you persevere and you go, you know, obviously everything unfolds into what it is now. So it was all worth the Phileas Fogging around the UK. But so then he moved over after about a year and a half, a long distance, to Dublin. And I was thrilled. I was delighted. And he was too. And at that stage, I guess, what was I like, 38. So I was a little bit anxious, you know, and I was like, look, I'd always been very open with him, you know, I would like to have babies sooner rather than later. So he was like okay with that. And then he moved over in the December, and I was like, February. I was like, right, okay, let's start trying for baby. And he's like, oh, okay. And we were blessed. I fell pregnant by the end of March.
Oh, April. Wow, that was so
yeah.
quick.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we were just, I think we weren't expecting it to be that quickly. Mm. So in a way, you know, it was a baptism of fire.
Yeah.
Because we were only living together 3 or 4 months.
Wow. And did you, were you doing like pregnancy tests, or did you just feel in your body something was different?
I remember I went to my cousin's wedding, Ellen's wedding. And I remember that day just feeling like really lethargic, and I was late, you know, a couple of days. So I was too nervous to do a test. I said, no, I'm going to leave it a couple of days. So then 4 days later, I did a test, and it was actually a very strong line. And I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it, you know. So I summoned him up to the bedroom and he was like, oh no, what have I done wrong? Like, did I not do the dishes? Did I? And I was like, I'm actually pregnant. And he was like, oh, great.
Wow, so quick.
Yeah.
He was hoping for a few more months of trying, probably.
Yeah. And for a few more months of us enjoying our honeymoon period of living together. So yeah, it was like super quick, faster than I could have ever imagined, not wished, imagined. But yeah, we just went with it. And then at about 7 weeks, I had a bit of a scare, which was, you know, it's not nice for any girl to go through that. So by the time the 12-week scan came around, I was quite nervous, you know. I was terrified, and I remember we walked to the hospital that morning and we didn't even speak, you know. We just were like, oh God, please let everything be okay, you know. And then we walked into the Coombe that morning and we left 4.5 hours later.
So what happened that morning?
Wow. I love to remember that day because it was such a surreal, incredible day. You know, I love it. We walked in. I was the first to be seen that morning. And, you know, they weigh in. They do all your other vitals. That was grand. And then we went into the scanning room. And the midwife, she was just so lovely. Jumped up on the bed. And within, I think it was like a minute, she found the two boys. So we were both like, oh, my God. Oh, okay. Right. Giggling.
And did she say the word twins at this point?
Yeah. Yeah. She was like, I can see two lovely heads. They're in the same sack. So, you know, they'll be identical boys. All of this information you're being told and you're going, blah, 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 blah. You're just can't get your head around it. And I'm like, oh my God, we're going to have to move house. Going to have to get a car. Thinking about practical things, you know. And that was fine. We were having a giggle. And then I could see her face kind of being a little bit, not concerned, but just changing a little bit. And I was like, oh no. What's wrong? You know, I asked her and she was like, and it took her literally about 10 seconds to come back to me. And, you know, you're like, what won't go back? Please tell me. She was like, there's actually another baby in here. It was like, your mind just goes blank.
You kind of couldn't figure it out.
I couldn't even understand. I was like, I don't understand. She's like, there's a third baby in here. And I was like, and you know the way, like, your blood runs cold, you're like, oh my God. And I started crying and she was like, oh no, it's okay, you know, this is gonna be okay. And I think you just cry out of shock, you know, because I definitely was one of those people who, the girls who, I don't know, I just never thought I would have twins. I never even looked in my family for twins. I certainly didn't know anybody who had a set of triplets. I'd never met a set of triplets, you know. So you're like, everything in an instant changes.
Your entire life.
Everything. And from that point on, you go, oh my God, I have three children. From this second on, whether whether whatever happens in the womb or delivery or from this second on, you go, oh my God, you know, wow. So it was all just incredible but shocking. And then she got on the phone and she called the multiple consultant and she skipped into the room and she was like her hands in the air and she was like, oh, this is amazing. And yeah, it was weird. Just at that instant, I was like, okay, if she's happy about it, then this, you know, it'll be grand. It'll be grand, you know. And she just gave me a hug and she was like, you know, don't be upset. We're going to look after you. And she's this incredible woman. She's just amazing. And from that second on, I just felt I trusted her and I felt it was going to be okay. And she was going to look after me, and it was kind of like a maternal figure, nearly, wow. Even though she was my doctor. So she scanned for another hour and a half between the scanning and talking, and she explained to me that they couldn't do the testing for
a Harmony test.
Yes, they couldn't do any of that. It's against law in Ireland for triplets, and so she really tried to scan them as much as she could, you know, just to see if there was any immediate defaults or anything like that. But she was very happy with them, and she was like, "Look, you know, from here on in, my best advice to you would be only listen to me. You know, I'm your doctor and I'm the one who's scanning them and looking at them. You know, don't Google when you go home. Don't freak yourself out." And she was like, just remember as well. And this I really, really connected with because of the work I'd been doing. She was like, your energy levels, the babies feed off. So just try your best not to be stressed and worried and, you know, the more relaxed you are, the happier environment they have. And that really struck with me because I'd been doing so much work, you know, like Reiki and acupuncture and all of that kind of healing. So we left, walked out of the scanning room stunned.
And what do you say to each other when you have that moment alone and are you just staring at each other with your mouths open?
It was funny because we had to go up and rebook the next appointment. So we went out to the reception. So walked out and I handed the girl the letter and she was like, oh yeah, Aisling Martin, the multiple consultant. Oh, congrats, you having twins? And I was like, no, it's triplets. And she was like, oh, fuck off. And I just was like, oh my God, she's in the coom and she's saying that. And she was like, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean it like that. And I was like, oh, okay. And we laughed and I think that cheered us up. Mm. Not, you know, it lightened the mood. And then we walked outside the hospital and we just kind of stood there and was like, okay, well, we better start calling people, you know. And like he spoke to his family the whole walk home and I spoke to my family, and it was like my sister thought I was taking the mickey out of her. She was like, oh no, stop
messing.
And I was like, no, it's actually triplets. And she's like, get a grip, like, just tell me please what happened, because they were all calling me because we were so long in the hospital. They were like, is everything okay?
Yeah,
you know, they were concerned.
So tell us what happened then with the egg. So one egg split. So you were going to have twins anyway.
Yeah. So they were explaining to me that I would have had fraternal twins, which are hereditary. So fraternal, you can have either girl and boy, 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 girl, girl, but they're separate eggs. So they're like siblings, you know, but they're twins. And then they told me that on day 9 or day 10, one of those eggs split. So that's where the identicals come in. Yeah. So I think that was in around the time that I was taking the test. You know, it's all, it blows your mind if you think about it, you know. And in fairness, they were explaining to me, you know, when you are a little bit older, the lovely term geriatric, you know, womb, geriatric mother. But often the eggs can split from their lesser quality, or else your body is just mother nature's kicking in and you're you're depositing more eggs because mm-hmm. you know you're coming to the end of your term. And I had had a scan a couple of months before that, and they had told me there was quite a few eggs left in my the left side. So there was a number of different factors, you know, but you still don't think it's going to be you.
Never.
Never. Yeah.
And how did you feel physically around that time?
Like, good. Like, I was getting really bad migraines, and that's why, funnily enough, I went to the doctor when I was 10 weeks. And he was like, he was hilarious. He was like, you feel a lot bigger than 10 weeks. And I was like, all right, yeah. And I was like, I don't know, but this is my first pregnancy, so I don't know. He was like, maybe you're a month ahead, and he was checking my dates. And as I was walking out of the room, he was like, geez, you might be having twins. And he joked. And even then, I just didn't, you know, it wasn't on my radar. And although I'd had bad migraines, apart from that, I was fine. Mm-hmm. You know, now I did get big fast, but I think I was very lucky. I had a fairly healthy pregnancy. We had no complications. I felt great. Like, the morning I went in, the final morning I was admitted, I made the fatal error of telling my obstetrician. She was like, okay, that's it now, we're going to keep you in. This is week 29. She's like, we're going to keep you in. And I was like, no, I have to go home and put out the bins. And she kind of looked at me and she was like, I am just going to pretend you didn't say that. You know, me wheeling the wheelie bin out. I felt fine. Yeah, it was really strange. Now, I mean, towards the end, you could feel the kicking all over, mm-hmm. you know, and the heads popping up. And
yeah. So you were obviously like very well taken care of in the coom and kind of guided along the entire process. Yeah. And everything was so well explained to you.
The coom were exceptional. Like, my doctor in particular, all the midwives, the care I got was incredible. You know, I used to joke saying I was like the VIP, you know, rocking in, hey, you know, and it was just...
And everyone knew your name.
Yeah, yeah. It was so funny. And, like, I think they take it so... Look, every pregnancy is so precious. But I guess, you know, when you're carrying three, you just need to be minded that little bit more. And you need to be reminded that you can't do everything. And you need to be reminded all the time that you have to rest. Mm. And although you may feel physically able to do this stuff, that doesn't mean that it's okay to do that, because the babies need all the nutrients, not you. So they were brilliant. Like, it was very hard because I was very active and I was a real worker, you know, so I worked so much. So I found that difficult, just kind of relaxing around the home. That was very weird. But every time I went in, I felt so much better leaving, because they'd pep you up again for the next 2 weeks and they were like, look, you're doing great, you know, the babies are doing great. And it was all very encouraging and very, like, when I wasn't going in, I really missed it, because they looked after you so well.
Yeah. And I think when you go for your 12 weeks scan, when you've one baby in your tummy, you come out and you're not rushing to mother care or Tony Keatley's or wherever to get all the stuff. But when they tell you you're having triplets, I mean, are you planning straight away?
Like, it was funny. I had said to Gideon, my partner, a couple of weeks before that, we were living in a townhouse in Kilmainham with steps up, and I was like, gas, now if we twins, we'd have to move, because I'd never get the buggy up. So when we came out of the hospital, I was like, well, we're moving and we have to get a new car, and I have to give up my job, and like, everything, it's so overwhelming. But in a weird kind of way, I guess I knew I couldn't take on all of that day. I knew I just had to go home and just take this on. And my parents are amazing. Like, my parents have always been like so supportive, so I knew we wouldn't be like stuck in a way, you know, and they would do everything in their power, and his parents are brilliant, so I knew that we would have challenges along the way, but I knew that we would be able to, you know, get our supplies in whatever way we could. But the funny thing was, and this just goes to show you how the kindness of Irish people, like, we were given 6 maxi cozies, right? And I had to give 3 away, like 6. We were given 4 cots.
Wow.
So I only took 3. We were given 6 Moses baskets. Like, it was unbelievable.
How did the word just get out, or
yeah,
did you have...
I think so. And right. I think people realise that you're in a situation that's so unique that people just want to help.
Wow, that's
you know?
Amazing.
And, like, people were just arriving up with, like, packets of vests, packets of muslin cloths. Like, some of my friends just collected stuff over the 7 or 8 months of, like, nappies, like, powder, wipes. It was, like, the generosity was unreal.
Wow.
It was unreal. And even Gideon was saying, he was like, because he comes from Cornwall, he was like, I've never known generosity like this, you know, and, like, my family were so generous. And so we kind of just knew, like, and I'm the type of person, like, you know, we had to kind of give up the dream of dressing them in our, you know, perfect clothes. We were just, if they were in clean, warm, dry clothes, happy days.
Yeah.
And actually, funnily enough, my parents and my auntie bought the buggy. The buggy was hideous. It was just like, it was 3 across.
Okay.
Which was, oh, there's just so many stories involved of complete embarrassment with it. But the buggy was probably the most expensive thing, you know, and my parents bought that. So, yeah, we were just, we kind of left it out to fate, and so much came back.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
so incredible.
Yeah.
And tell
us
about then the day you went in to have them.
Yeah, so that morning I went in for my routine 2 weekly, and at this point they were kind of doing me every 10 days. So again, I felt fine. I'd had my baby shower a couple of days before that, and I was mincing around in my heels and thought I was fab. Obviously I wasn't. And I went in that morning, and one of the little boys, they call it twin to twin transfusion, and we were lucky that hadn't started up until this point, but it just means that one of them is feeding more than the other. So she was a little bit concerned about that, so she was like, okay, I'm going to keep you in, you know. And as I said, I had to go home and do the bins, and she was like, we'll ignore that. So I think I was, yeah, I was quite surprised, and I was like, I'm not kind of ready, you know. I thought I'd make it to the 34 weeks. Anyway, they checked me in and they gave me steroids that day. So the steroids kind of allowed me to last another 10 days with them in, which was brilliant.
Great.
Because as they were explaining to me every morning, and they scanned me every morning, they were explaining to me, the longer we have them in every single day is like such a bonus for them. And because only one was struggling, they have to weigh up the odds. And, you know, listen, if one is struggling, they'll take them all out, but they have to nearly push it out as far as they can, you know. So it's this kind of dynamic that they're dealing with every day. So anyway, 10 days later, that was the morning, they were like, okay, we're gonna, you know, we're gonna take them out today. And yeah, you're just like, in your head you're going, oh my god, this, I'm just not ready for this. I'm gonna have 3 children by the end of the day today, you know. And no matter how they're born or whatever happens, you still have 3 children.
Mm-hmm.
So I always remember that morning walking into the theatre, and I was just so terrified. I was so scared. And like, my partner, he was so excited, and I was just like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to go in. I've no choice. And my doctor was there, and there was like 35 people in the room. And
was there?
Yeah. They have to have a team for each baby. And I just was like, please don't, they were telling you, I'm such and such, their name, and this is my, and you're like, oh, okay.
Speechless.
You know, and I just shut down, and they gave me, she held my hand and I was crying. It was weird. I just, I don't know, I just wasn't prepared mentally. And they gave me the epidural, and I had a really bad reaction to that, and my heart rate dropped, and I was like wailing, crying. I was like, please help me, please help me. Yeah, it was awful. And they were like, a nurse was trying to help me, and they couldn't give me any water or anything, so that floored me, you know, because I felt like I was falling off a cliff. It was just insane. And they had to give me some sort of adrenaline to boost me back up again. Right. So by the time they were taking the babies out, I was like, just take them out. So it was kind of heartbreaking that I wasn't more in a jovial mood, is the wrong word to use, but I wasn't more excited. But I was just floored, you know. So they took the babies out, and it was all quite rushed. And then they just bring a baby over and you have a little look, and bring another baby over and have a little look, and then they bring them off, you know. So that was hard, because it's, you see so many women and they have the skin to skin and they have the little moments, you know. And I was on like whatever drugs I was on, so I was like, okay, you know, it's all going to be okay, and they're in the best hands. And the midwives were all like, look, the babies are doing well. Jude was a little bit anemic, so they were a little bit worried about him, but they were like, look, he's going to be fine. So I had to go down and rest for a couple of hours, and your head is just like, you're thrilled, but you're just, it's really weird. It's so strange. And then they brought me down a couple of hours later, and they wheeled me down, and it was odd, you know, which should have been a moment where that was amazing, because you go into the room and you're like, I don't know who to go to first. These are my little babies, and who do I say hello to first, you know? So then, like, it was great, and my partner was great at the time, because he was just so excited that made me go, come on, this is brilliant, you know, and they're all doing great. And then you get another shock, because see, they're so tiny. They're just so tiny.
What weight were they?
Beatrice and Will were 3 pounds 8 and 3 pounds 10, and Jude was 2 pounds 12. Wow. No, he was 2 pounds 10, and his skin was quite translucent, and we used to laugh. He looked a little bit like Mr. Burns, because they have big heads and tiny bodies. They look like birds in a way, you know.
Yeah.
And the Coombe were amazing. They had me prepared for this, so I did know it was going to be a little bit like this. And you know, like, I think it was just the emotion, the hormones.
And can you touch them when...
No.
No, you can't.
No. They let us hold them maybe on the second or third day. And then that night, the first night, Beatrice, her lung collapsed. So I remember I was lying in bed 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was like really deep sleep, really. You know, you're just gone. And the doctor came up to me, and he was like... British, you know, your daughter's had a setback. And you're like, who? And because you're not even used to having a daughter.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, well, like, so setback to you obviously means she's, you know. And he said she's had the medical term, pneumothorax. And you're like, well, look, what does that mean? And he's like, her lung has collapsed, but we've intubated her, and she's stable at the minute. And you know when you hear stable, you're like, oh my God. So he was like, look, she's okay, so you just go back and rest, okay? And I was so angry. I was like, oh, I'll just go back and rest, will I? Okay. So I called the nurse down, and I was like, I have to go and see her. I have to go, you know. So she's like, of course. So we got up at whatever time it was, 3:30 in the morning. She wheeled me down, and I was on my own, and again tears started flowing, and you're like, oh, this is just too much, you know. And the nurse was like, she's okay, she's going to be okay. And I was like, I know. And I guess I just wanted somebody to be there.
It's hard. The nights are hard, aren't they?
The nights are hard, yeah. And you're trying to pump and breast, or not breastfeed, but express. And you're 8 weeks early, so it's not coming. So you feel like a failure. And it was all of these emotions, et cetera, et cetera. But look, she was great. So we didn't get to hold her for about 7 or 8 days. Mm. And then we got to hold her and it was lovely, you know. Yeah, it was lovely because she's the little girl and she's special. So, yeah, the NICU was tough.
And you know. Did you have visitors coming into you at that point, or did you just kind of knuckle down? Just
they
the two of you?
Only allowed grandparents in to see the babies,
right?
So that was nice for the grandparents. I didn't have any visitors in because I was trying to express, and it was like. I guess I just wanted to be down with them all the time. Mm.
The visitors can be a lot, can't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and like. You just feel you're exhausted and you're not really up for conversation. And, you know, so after about 5 days, they were like, look, you're more than welcome to stay here. And I was like, no, I'm going to go home, because I felt I'd be better and stronger if I, you know, had my normal clothes on and makeup on. And I know that sounds silly, but, you know, 100%. The little bits to yourself and... You know, I just knew to go home. And I knew that I had to be strong for this, because this is my gig. Mm-hmm. These are my babies, you know. So you have to put your fighting gloves on and go, come on. And, like, it was weird, the transformation when I went home and being at home. I felt much better.
And just having that support from your partner.
From my partner, and just, you know, being able to spend time with him again, because I'd been in 2.5 weeks at that point. So I was definitely ready to go home, and my parents were there around the clock, and his parents, so they were making dinners and, you know, like running baths, and you know, you were really minded, so therefore you were strong enough to go in.
And do you remember a time, or did it happen, that you felt like excited to get them home, or did you obviously felt like they were in such safe hands in the hospital?
It's funny, because they had said to me they were going to come home one by one, because Will was always a little bit ahead of the other two, and then Beatrice caught up, and they said that they would send them home with £5, and or else they call it 35 weeks gestation. So it was definitely going to be 4 weeks, we knew that. And Jude, bless him, like, he caught on in the last couple of days. And then I walked in on a Saturday and they were like, okay, we're going to send the three of them home. And I was like, oh my God. And you're like, I don't want to look like I don't want to take my own children home. But you're like, shit. So I was like, yeah, okay, cool, great, let's do this. And they were like, look, and in fairness to the Coombe, it's like this incredible academy of like how to look after babies. You go to like, you know, winding classes, you go to like breastfeeding classes, you go to like, it's amazing. They teach you everything. So in a way you are prepared. You just have to grow a pair and do it, you know. And they are only tiny, so you have to give yourself a break and go, look, they are tiny, you are nervous, but you're Grant, you're well able, you know what to do, and, you know, bring them home. It's time. And we were lucky, they were strong babies in the hospital. And we were also very lucky because they fed very well, they weaned very well, there was no colic, there was no reflux, any of that. So we were lucky. But like, God, yeah, the first month at home was insane. Like, I remember one day, I don't know where Gideon was. It was coming up to Christmas. It was like the week before Christmas. He might have been out the shops or something, and my parents were over and my sisters, and I was feeding the three babies, and I took an antihistamine because my sinuses were bad that day, and I actually fell asleep having not fed the last baby. And I woke up and I saw the full bottle and I was like, oh my God, I'm such a bad mother. Like, you know, obviously, you know, you're not, but you were just like RoboCop.
And is it all hands on deck? Is everyone in your house all the time?
Well, they had also said that because of the risk of infection, because they were still not full term. They weren't full term until Christmas Day. So they had said, like, no visitors, no people coming in and out, and especially because it was December. So if there anybody had a sniffle or any type of cough or cold, they definitely weren't allowed in. And we had alcohol gel everywhere, and people had to wash their hands. And I'm really oh, it's grand, but you know, the nurses were like, it's not grand. If your baby gets an infection, it's straight back into hospital, you know. So we had to be quite diligent about that, you know. And so it was only really my parents and my sister. My sister was amazing, and then his parents. So, like, it was a bit of a strange Christmas that year, but it was lovely, you know. But, yeah, you're feeding them every 3-4 hours, so it's, like, hardcore, you know. And then you're washing the bottles, and then you have to... you have to be so military, because you won't make it otherwise. You know, you have to, like, refill the changing station all the time. You have to get all the nappies and vests. The baby grows. Everything is just boom, 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 boom. You have to be like that, because if you're in a situation where maybe Gideon is upstairs and I'm feeding the three and there's no nappies.
Yeah.
You know, it just... And for us, routine was our only way through it.
How did you get through those days?
Oh, jeez, it was insane. Yeah, it was insane. I kind of was okay in those days because you're so, I think, adrenaline, and you're so, like, it's all new and it's all, I can do this, you know. And my neighbours used to always go, God, jeez, fair play to you, get them out in the buggy every day. And I was like, yeah, but if I don't, I'll lose my mind.
I'll get back to my conversation with Bridget in just a second, but first I wanted to tell you about my Fitbit. By being on Fitbit, it allows you to get to know yourself better, to understand your health with data and insights that are unique to you. As I always say, knowledge is power, and Fitbit provides data about your health and well-being to help empower and support you in leading a balanced and healthy lifestyle. I love being able to track my sleep, keep an eye on my resting heart rate over time, as well as capture key stats from my workouts. I'm so happy to have Fitbit on board, as it helps keep me focused and on track with my goals and training.
And would the buggy fit in places?
No, it was a hideous thing. No, couldn't get into shops, couldn't get into coffee shops. I was like, it was awful. I was like Freak of the Village. I'd say you could see it from space. And like, people would drive by and they'd be rolling down the window going, are they triplets?
No.
And you'd be going, oh my God, Morto. So I got really sick of walking the streets after like 6 months, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna start going into like big shops like Tesco, or, you know. But then I'd go into shops and I'd be like tortured walking around the place. They'd be following me around and ask me the weights of the babies. And in hindsight now, I go, well, God love them, they're only just interested. Whereas for you, it's your 1 hour off.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I just don't want to talk, I just want to zone out.
I remember when I had Pia, like, you get stopped in the shop so much by people just going, it goes so fast.
And you're like, well, time is going in slow motion right now for me.
And I think I'd say 95% of men who walked by just kind of went, oh, you know, and just were like, you have your hands full there. And you're like, yes, I know, I have my hands full. Okay. You know, it's like, and now I look back and I was going, God, I was so cross and ratty. But I was just survival mode.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you do. And like, I remember being a little one time and I'd plucked up the courage to go in, and I had bumped into my friend. So she had three children. So we'd like six kids under five walking around the shop. We looked like hilarious. And you know, these like African women were following me around the shop, and they're like, oh, it's a blessing. And I was like, oh, I know, thanks a million, I know. And by the time I'd got to the tills, I was so flustered because there were like seven or eight people walking behind me at this point. I was like, I just want to get out now, like, I have to get out. And I was trying to push the buggy against the wall in the till, and it got jammed, and then I was knocking over displays and it was hysteria, like, and everybody at the shop had gathered around the tills and I was just like going red and I was like, I have to get out of here. So we couldn't get the buggy back out, so they had to get four security men to lift the buggy over the tills. And I was like, is this a sign to tell me to stop going into shops?
Yeah.
But like, yeah, you just kind of have to get used to the fact that you're the freak of the village, you know.
Surrender.
Yeah. And like, you'd see cars driving by all the time and, you know.
Slowing down.
Slowing down. Kind of like art in their necks. And in fairness, I probably would have done the same, you know.
You spoke to me during the week about losing your mum when you were six to breast cancer. And how when you gave birth that it brought up a lot of maybe grief that you hadn't dealt with before, maybe made you think about it differently.
Yeah, like, I was very young when my mother died, and it's funny, back in those days in the 80s there was no grief counselling for children. So like, it took me, I'd say, till I was about 12 to kind of realise she wasn't coming back, you know. And then you've my dad remarried, and she's brilliant, she's amazing. But like, I guess I went to counselling in my 30s to deal with my mother dying, which is a long time after. So you're confused all the time about your grief, and you think, oh well, it's 20 years ago, so I should be grand, and etc. But the counselling really helped, and that was fine. And so I was flying, you know, through my 30s. But then I guess when you have a baby, everything is so primal, and you go back to, you know, I guess I just kind of realised that she must have loved me so much, because the love I had for my own children, I never really thought about that, and that used to make me really sad. And then it used to make me really sad that she didn't meet them, or like, get to know them, or even help me, you know. And like, some days I used to be so low. The second year I had them was very, very tough, and I used to be so low, and I just would be like, I just wish she was here, because she would understand, you know. But then you kind of go back to the days of your counselling, and you know what you have to do to try and make sense of it all. And like, God, I still think about her all the time, in terms of it is so crap she didn't get to meet like her triplet grandchildren, you know. But if I dwell on it too long, it just holds me back, you know. And I can't be sad around my little babies, because they're just the best thing ever, and they put such a smile on my face every day. And that's not cliche, they drive me crazy, but they do make me so happy that, you know, I just have to go, it is a shame, and it is a shame that she wasn't here, you know, at the birth or any of those things. But that's life, isn't it?
Absolutely. But it's a very interesting point that you can go for counselling 20 years after something has happened, and it can benefit you.
I think people who everybody's different, and everybody deals with things in different ways. But I just was like, I just can't keep saying it's grand that she died. It's not grand. How is that grand? You know, and I think that was my turn of phrase for so many years. Oh, it's grand. People would say, oh God, I'm so sorry to hear your mother died. And you'd be like, oh yeah, it's grand. So long ago. And you're like, God, it's not grand, you know. And it's funny when people say, oh, I'm so sorry about your mother dying. Now I go, oh, thanks, you know, because it's always going to be there with you. You know, it's just how much it comes into you on a daily basis, you know, and you have to let it be with you, and, you know, manage it as best as you can, and not put it into a cupboard and forget about it. Because as we know, things like that just fester and then they explode. Yeah. Yeah.
And you said to me during the week that asking for help is something that you learned through having triplets, and it's something I've learned through having cancer. And now my mum is always on my doorstep. I was so blessed to have her. But it is that kind of, I think we're all like, no, I can handle it. I'm fine.
I think I knew, like, even the first day when I found out, and I was talking to my stepmother, and she's amazing, and she was like, we'll do whatever we can to help you. Don't you worry. You don't worry about a thing. And I knew from that phone call on, I have to start accepting help, because I was so independent. Like, you know, when I was a child, I used to pack my own bag. I never wanted anybody to do anything for me. I always had my own money. You know, I hate asking for help. I really hate it. But I knew from then on in, you have to ask for help, because if you, like, there was one day in particular that I remember, and I was weaning them and I was feeding them porridge, and I always remember this memory because I knew I was on the edge at this point, and I was on my own every day with them, and I was, you know, doing okay and you're bombing along, and then this day they wouldn't eat the porridge and I had it in a plastic bowl, and I was inside of me, I was like raging that they wouldn't eat the porridge. And when you look at it retrospectively, you go, oh my god, like, it's porridge, you know. And I just got so angry and I threw the bowl across the kitchen and I was like, I can't do this anymore, I can't, you know. And that moment just made me go, stop trying to be a warrior. It's not helping your children, and it's definitely not helping you, you know. And I remember ringing my sister that afternoon going, I need more help, you know. I need help during the day, and I need company. I was lonely, you know, and like I just knew ultimately it doesn't help the children, because my emotions are frayed trying to do everything, you know. And like, my partner was amazing, and he would come in from work, drop everything and just get involved straight away, so I was blessed with him, you know. But it was the days that I just was like, I need more help. I have to do this. And I was trying to do my thesis for my master's when they were about two. Oh, I know, it was mental, and I just had to get it done so my parents would mind them and I'd study at night. But like, the stress of that was enormous, you know. And I had so much help around me then, and I had help with functional everyday things, but at that point I knew I needed help from a professional, because my mind was like fried. And I went to my GP and I spoke to him, and I was like, I don't know what's going on, but I can't cope, I can't deal with what's going on in my life at the minute, it's all too much. And he was like, listen, well done, the first step was coming here, you know, and we'll help you and we'll sort it out. And like, you know, honestly, from then on, it was weird. It was like things just lifted, you know. And I was willing to admit that I needed help, you know, both in functional everyday things and in my mental health. Definitely.
And did that like lessen the kind of burden you were carrying inside, or the pressure you were putting on yourself?
Yeah, I think so. And the doctor explained to me at the time, because I was like, I don't really understand, is this like delayed postnatal, is this, what is this? And he said, look, he kind of compared it to, you know, it was a bit of a strange comparison, but I guess what he meant was like, if somebody is being in Guantanamo Bay, being tortured day in, day out, they eventually break down, you know. And it's not one single episode, or it's not one single, you can't really categorise it, but they're just emotionally exhausted, they're stressed, they're completely anxious. And he was like, and you're just at that point now where you're broken down, you know. So, you know, he gave me course of tablets to take and stuff like that, and it just helps kind of relieve the anxiousness during the day. And most importantly, he was like, try and, you know, set out time in your morning to meditate and try and set out time to do yoga when they're on their nap. And I did a little bit then, but now I do it. I try and do it 4 or 5 days a week because that's amazing. But it was great because it was like, you kind of realise people really do want to help, you know, and you don't have to be like, people used to go, oh my God, you're amazing. How do you do it? And part of you feels like a fraud because inside you're like, I'm not amazing. I'm like a basket case inside. I feel like I'm actually losing my mind. And just because I get them dressed, I get them in the buggy and I walk around the village, that doesn't mean that I'm amazing.
Yeah.
It means that I'm just getting by.
So that kind of self-care really, I suppose, it kind of fills up your tank again. And then that in turn allows you to be a better mother, a better partner, a better for yourself.
It's funny in your intro, and I really like it because it's so important. It's like that, even that 10 minutes to yourself is telling yourself that you do matter as well. Like even a cup of coffee and a biscuit. You know, I went to the GP yesterday for the first time in I don't know how long for just a checkup.
So important.
Just a checkup, you know, and like he was like, God, fair play to you. And I'm like, yeah, you know, am I okay? What's going on? Mammograms, smears, everything, you know, just it's now time for me to make sure I'm okay, you know, and that's coming more and more. I've a little bit more time each day to do that. And God, in your head, it helps so much.
I think when I had Pia, like I tried to do it all. I wanted to do everything, you know, everyone would try to help me, but I'm like, no, I'll do it. And then when I got sick, when she was 7 months old, then I, you know, asked for help.
I think
help
you're amazing. I don't know how you did that. Like
it was hard, but, you know, everyone just rallied. And that's how I got through it because of my family and Jamie. But I think it was only then that I would allow myself to have time alone and not feel guilty. Yeah. So like if Jamie would come home and, you know, there's no dinner and he'd go, I'll go to the shop. I'll go, no, I'll go to the shop. And I just go by myself in a shop by myself.
I
like,
know.
You know, it's
cruising
those
the aisles.
Little things, isn't it?
Yeah. And people used to always say to me as well, like, God, well done, you put your makeup on. And you're like, my makeup is key. Like I feel better with when I have my makeup on. It just that's my 10 minutes to myself of, you know, the act of putting on the makeup. And then you go, okay, great, you know. And if I didn't do that every day, I just like, it doesn't mean you have to, like, everybody's different.
Yeah.
And everybody gets joy out of different things. And that was my little, I didn't want to look like a complete, like, don't get me wrong, in the house I look like somebody out of an asylum, between my hair and my makeup. And but, you know, as you say, those kind of little minutes to yourself. And it's funny, I used to go to Lidl and Aldi on my own when Gideon would come home from work, and I'd be like, Dadley, you know, just taking my time.
Yeah, the luxury of thinking about which cheese you're going to buy.
Yeah,
you know,
and just being able to stand there with nobody.
Yeah,
no kind of anxiety of are they okay, are they okay, you know they're okay, they're with their daddy. It's time for you to just take time out, you know.
And tell me about the triplets. What are they like?
Oh Jesus, they're great. Like I'm actually quite lucky because they were very good as babies and they slept quite well. Now we did get a night nurse in, but they're generally happy little children. You know, now, look, obviously they have their moments like any other child, you know, but it's funny, the dynamic between the two boys, though. What I will say is sometimes I feel a bit like, oh, it must be hard to be an identical twin because you're so intertwined and that everything is like a competition. Mm. Competition for your mother, competition for your daddy, competition for the toy, competition for that cup, everything. So God love them, they're like David and Goliath all the time, you know, but then they're the best pals, you know. And when they get older, they're going to be so lucky. Yeah, like now I'm so proud of them, I'm like chuffed, you know, whereas in the beginning I was like, yeah, they're triplets, so what, like, you know, I just like, I guess mentally I was probably in a different space. But now I'm like amazed that they're triplets and it's so unique and that they're healthy and happy, you know. And we've kind of come through like the hardest time. I know you were saying as well, when 18 months to two and a half is tough. Like, whoa.
Full on.
It's full on. And the emotions, the screaming, the crying, you know, whoa. And that's why now it's so nice because we can go for coffee together. I can bring them on my own for coffee. We can walk around the shops together and they'll stay with me. And I'm kind of like a proud mother now walking around, you know. And yeah, they're great. They're really affectionate. And
yeah, because I'd heard people saying that before, that it gets better year after year after year. And Pia is three now. She was three yesterday. And
happy birthday, Pia.
Yeah. And it's funny that we recorded this week. I think the universe was like,
yeah,
because I don't really talk about Pia too much.
I know, because your children are so precious.
Yeah, and yeah. But she's the love of my life, and our kids are very similar in age. And I think when they're three and they're chatting and they can take off their own clothes for the bath just play a little bit more independently, it's just a beautiful stage.
Do you find now you can walk around with her and, you know, go for coffee and go to the shops and do like normal little things, you know? They're not babies anymore.
And do you hear from, is there many triplets in Ireland?
Well, funnily enough, when the first thing my doctor said to me was like, try and find triplet mothers to get their advice, you know, because only they know. So I met four triplet mothers while I was pregnant and I was like, oh my god, there's millions of them. But like, then when I started the Instagram, that's when I met a couple of girls on Instagram, Irish girls, and they're fab. Like, we get on really well. And I guess it's nice to see other women go through what you're going through, you know. And we have nice little kind of community going on. And you don't feel so different, you know. You feel part of like a little gang, I suppose. And you know, often we'll text each other and say, oh my God, I'm losing my mind. Or, you know, oh my God, how did you do this? Or, you know, so that kind of way, it's nice to talk to other people who can relate, you know.
I think your Instagram is so honest. And I think that's why people follow you and turn to you, because you're not putting out this picture perfect life.
I think from the very beginning, I was like, I don't want to mislead people. And like, it's fab to put up the little stories of the babies having a great time and I'm having a great time. But ultimately, so many women, much like myself, struggle when you first have a child. And it's so shocking, and your life is turned on its head. And I think there needs to be more of a conversation about, you know, how tricky it can be in the first couple of years and how isolated women can feel. And if you don't immediately, if you're not Mother Nature the second your baby's born, that's okay. You don't have to feel, you know, like everything's perfect. You've the perfect job, the perfect husband, the perfect life. You know, none of us do. And I know Instagram is brilliant, but it can be, and I'm a victim to it too. We put up the very nice parts of it, of course. So that's why I was like, I want people to know. And as well, people used to always say, oh, you're amazing, you're amazing. And as I said before, I'd be like, oh God, I'm not. Like, I cry most days, you know, and I lose my mind. And I just want to let other girls know it's okay to be like that.
Yeah.
And you know, like I did a post there recently and I must have had maybe 50 girls message me. I swear to God, it was unreal. And it was, I was saying that I go through, you know, went through an awful time and I asked for help, et cetera, et cetera. And so many girls, you just realise that you know, in your mind when you're young and you go, I'm going to have this and I'm going to have that. And then reality happens and you go, gosh, this is quite different, you know. And very often you're on your own because you're at home with your babies or whatever it is. So, yeah, I just want to be real and connect with people, you know. And like, I really enjoy it. I probably don't do it as much as I could. I really enjoy it. And the people I have following me, I'm very lucky. They're just, they're so lovely, you know. And I've been lucky. I haven't come across, you know, any, touch wood now, any negativity. But I think if part of you keeps it real, you know, it's better for other people out there. And better for yourself.
Yeah.
You know.
So your Instagram is Bridie Bunch Triplets. And I would recommend everyone to follow you
Thank you.
Realness.
Thank you, Georgie.
Thank you so much for coming in today, for making me smile, for making me appreciate my own baby and everything that we have. So thank you so much.
And you're doing a great job. Thank you. Thank you. I loved it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Fitbit. If you're enjoying this podcast, please hit the subscribe button and leave a review. For more on my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford.